closes. Cato loses the football. Scooped it back up, and Hamilton's got it.
Adrian Tracy again with the strip. He's been all over the field tonight.
Welcome to Pod's QB. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Okay, Mike, how have you been this week? You know, we usually just go right into our fantasy stuff, but I kind of wanted to get we don't talk to each other very much outside of the football stuff. So how's your week been since last week?
It's been pretty good. I was lucky enough to be a guest on the Eskimos Empire podcast last night, so we did that, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, it's been a good week. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm sitting here in a nice. Nice hotel room in Kingston, enjoying some time away. So it was a long day of travel, but nice to be away for a little bit. And yeah, just nice to relax and not worry about anything. But I'm glad to hear that you're on the Empire Pod. I've been on there a couple times the last couple of years, and they've always been really, really nice to me. And I'm sure you got to actually go to the Turf District, which has been pretty cool.
It was really cool. They have a lot of cool Eskimo stuff there. They got the room all painted up green and gold, so... Yeah, it was. They were really cool dudes, and it was really fun.
Did they chirp you at all about how our fantasy team is just one game behind theirs, or did that not
They did not chirp. So
okay, well, that gives us a good intro into the top of the show where we talk about the CFL Podcast Family Fantasy League. We won again, Michael. We won again. This time we took down the BC Lions Den podcast 199 to 147. We're 3-1 on the year. But the biggest thing for us is we are the highest scoring team in the league with 801 points after four games. It means we're averaging over 200 points a game. We're crushing it. And we have the second highest point differential. The only team to have scored more and allowed less is one of the 4-0 teams, the 2-0 podcast, who is the only team to beat us so far this year. And that loss that we took to them was in week two when the Ticats completely crapped the bed against the BC Lions. So had Hamilton just played a mediocre game, we're sitting here at 4-0, but we're very much still in the running to win this thing. And I really like our chances going forward. I think we got a really strong team. I really do.
Yeah, well, there's still plenty of football left. So 3-1, only one behind the leaders in the group. So yeah, there's still plenty of time to come back and win this thing.
Yeah. So this week we take on the Rouge Ranters of Rouge Radio. They are 1-3 and just got their first win of the season last week against the CFL Horsemen. So maybe they're trying to make a little mini run here to get out of they're near the bottom. I think we have two 0-4 teams in the league, and then I think we have a couple 1-3 teams. So they're certainly at the bottom right now, maybe looking to make a move at our expense, but I just don't see that happening.
No, I don't think so.
No, we're going to 4-1. That's just how we do. We're loaded. We're loaded. We're loaded for bears. Right? We're just gonna come on. I respect those guys, but we're gonna kick their ass.
Oh, for sure.
So speaking of ass kickings, last Friday in Montreal, Ticats put the boots to the Montreal Alouettes. They go in there and they beat the Owls 31-7. It was a very sloppy first half of the game, but the second half was just all Ticats. And, you know, like I said, they put the boots to the Alouettes in that second half especially, and then it was just smooth sailing to victory. So with the amount of points that this team scored, the offense certainly had a big rebound game from the last couple of weeks where they haven't looked that great. They didn't look good in the first half, but that second half, they seemed to get the ball rolling a little bit. And what were some of your key offensive takeaways from this game, Mike?
Well, yeah, it was pretty ugly first half of football. It was 5-4 at the end of the second quarter. Hamilton still didn't look great on offense, but the one big thing that I took away from it was, hallelujah, they gave the ball to CJ Gable, am I right?
Oh, dude, when I saw the numbers after the end of the game and saw that he had, I think it was 21 total touches, the smile on my face was as big as you can imagine. It was finally nice to see them use Gable. He gets into the end zone for the first time this season. Yeah, it was just great to see him that involved in the offense.
Yeah, 17 carries for 61 yards. Not a huge average, but, you know, you got one TD on the ground. He's just got to give him the ball as much as possible. He had four catches for 37 yards, which is pretty darn good. And that one great screen pass that he had, that really, you know, he had that drive, and that was all his drive, that touchdown drive where he had the screen pass, and then, you know, I think it was a 9-yard, 10-yard, 11-yard touchdown run. So, yeah, just great to see him get the ball finally. They, you know, they had nothing going in the first half, and then they just decided, let's just give the ball to Gable, see what happens, you know, put all the pressure on his back and see if he can carry the team, and he did just that and had a huge part in this Ticats win.
Yeah, at halftime, I went on Twitter and said the Ticats had no business being in that game. They played atrociously in the first half, but Montreal was just as bad. And for them to be up 5-4 going into half, I thought was really flattering to them. And I didn't know what to expect coming out of the second half, because this team, under Ken Austin, has not been typically a great coming out of the locker room team. We've seen them struggle in the first half and then continue to struggle and then make some comeback victories. We've seen them look absolutely dominant in the first half and blow teams out of the water. We saw that a ton last year. So this was kind of nice to see them not play particularly well and then to refocus and make some adjustments at the break, and came out and they looked pretty good. Of course, it was all predicated on the massive return touchdown by our boy Speedy B. Just what more can we say about this guy? It seems like any time this team needs a big play, he's the guy that makes it happen. And it was, once again, 86-yard punt return touchdown that kind of opened the floodgates and kind of took this game in the direction that it went, with the Ticats getting a victory.
Yeah, he always seems to be there for the team to give them a lift. He has been playing great this year. He hasn't lost a step. He's still the same guy. So let's just hope that he can keep, you know, getting big yards, giving this team good field position, and scoring touchdowns. I mean, and speaking of another great performance on special teams, Brett Maher, 5 for 5, longest 56 yards. I mean, can't get any better than that.
Dude, that 56-yard field goal, I said it in my piece on 3 Down Nation. I thought that was the turning point of the game, because they drive down, they get the ball, not particularly deep, but they're going to attempt a 51-yard field goal. Then John Chick takes the penalty, and it moves him back to a 56-yard field goal. And it's like, this is the type of thing that has hurt this team in the past, mistakes that lead to points being taken off the board. And Maher just goes out there and boots it, and that thing would have been good from like 60. Like, that was just dead on. It was a beautiful kick. And then the rest of the game, he was just money. And it seems like this guy, on the road at least, is untouchable. Like, he was 4 for 4 against the Argos in Toronto. He's 5 for 5 against Montreal. If he could just get the conditions at home, if he could get that to work in his favor, this guy would be quite the kicker for the Tabbies.
Yeah, dude has one hell of a leg. I mean, it's impressive how he can boom that ball on punts and on field goals. I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. He had that one bad game, but other than that, he's been pretty solid.
Yeah, I actually think outside of the game against BC, he's been perfect. I think he's 10 for 13 on the year, and those three misses all came in one game. So, again, maybe we're a little too harsh on him after the poor performance, maybe a little too high on him after the good performance, but it sure looks like so far the good performances have outweighed the bad. It'll be interesting to see what he does the remainder of this road trip, and kind of interesting to see what he will do once they get back to Hamilton for the August 20th matchup against the Riders. Anything else offensively that you'd like to touch upon? Because it was, like you said, kind of a poor performance, a decent performance. We got Gable, but the passing game didn't really do all that much. It wasn't a typical Ken Austin coach game, right?
No, it wasn't pretty in the first half, like I said before, and they really went to the run game in the second half and short passes to Gable. But, you know, Mazzoli had decent numbers again, 19 for 27, 208 yards, only one pick. He cut down on the turnovers, which we talked about he had to do, and he did that, so I was happy about that. Chad Owens, another solid game, not a huge game, 5 catches for 52 yards. I think Underwood had a really good bounce-back game, 4 catches, 68 yards, an average of 17 yards per catch. His longest was 41, so that's really good to see him bounce back. You know, the Bozo last week bounces back and has a good game.
Maybe he took your Bozo-ing of him personally and decided he was going to have a game and prove you wrong.
Yeah, he showed me, so I'm good on him.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising the Cats were able to win this so handily, and yet two of the guys that have been maybe the two key catalysts of this offense, Andy Fantuz and Luke Tasker, combined for like three catches for 24 yards. They were pretty invisible most of the game, but like you said, this was the C.J. Gable show. Not great numbers, like yards per rush and stuff like that, but 21 touches, 98 yards and a touchdown. I'll take that every single week.
Absolutely. That's more like I'm overjoyed with how many touches he got. So let's see next week if they utilize him as much as they did in Montreal in this week's game in Edmonton. So, and now we get to the defense, which is a huge story last week. So give me what you took away from the defense last week.
Well, I think you know where we're starting with this one. It's with number five, Adrian Tracy, and the group of defensive linemen for the Hamilton Tigercats, who I have dubbed the four linemen of the sackpocalypse. Man, mm-hmm. They were eight total sacks for this team. Six of them came from the defensive line. All four starters recorded at least one sack. Tracy had two. Chick had two. Laurent had one. Nevis had one. Although Nevis's was when Rakeem Cato inexplicably rolled out and was running out of bounds. And instead of throwing it away, he ran out of bounds with the ball and took a seven-yard sack. Yeah. It was a very, very strange play. But Adrian Tracy, man, all offseason we heard about this guy. The team was very high on him. He was part of their marketing plan. And throughout the first three games, he had not really performed. I believe we had called him out on this show a couple of times for some subpar performances and really being absent from the stat sheet. But holy smokes, did he make up for it in this game. 11 tackles, 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a pass defense. He was also named, I don't know if you saw, he was one of the Shaw top performers of the week. He was the top performer of the week, the number one guy on the list. Like, man, if he can, I'm not expecting, you know, these numbers every week, but if he can start becoming a consistent threat at the defensive tackle position or the defensive line position, whew, man, this defensive line is going to be massive. Monster effort from all guys around, but Tracy especially gets my game ball if we were to hand those out.
Absolutely. I mean, seven or eight sacks, I'm not sure which one it was,
it was eight sacks, six from the D-line, but eight in total.
So that's a huge number. That doesn't happen. Very rarely you see those kind of numbers in the sack category. So it was great to see that defensive line perform the way that it can, you know, up to its potential. They have a ton of talent in the front four, and they really showed it this game. I mean, it's great to see John Chick coming around the corner with all that speed, all that effort like he has in the past. He's still giving it at an advanced age, football age. And like you said, Tracy was just on fire. It's great to see a young guy like him who is really given a chance to shine this year, take his opportunity and run with it in this game. So hopefully he can really turn it up for the rest of the season and be one of the best D linemen in the league.
I really don't think that people, and including ourselves, are talking about John Chick enough. I think he has very quietly put together, which is odd for a guy who's been in the league a number of years, former Defensive Player of the Year, former Grey Cup champion. But he currently leads the league in sacks. He's tied with Alex Bazzi with four. Like, he has been absolutely unstoppable, with maybe the exception of – actually, no, not even the exception of BC. In the BC game, I think he was one of the guys that we talked about who – I think he had two fumble recoveries. Like, he has been great from the start of the season until now. And I remember when he was signed, I was very skeptical of the move because he's a little bit older. Yeah. You wonder how much he still got left in the tank. I was wrong. This dude has got a lot left in the tank. He has been absolutely fantastic throughout the first four games of the season for the Hamilton Tigercats.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little skeptical as well when they brought him in. But he's just been around the ball like every game. In that first game, he had that tip that Simone Lawrence picked up for the touchdown. And this game, he has two sacks and two fumble recoveries in another game. So he's just, if he's not getting sacks, he's contributing in other ways. You know, he's dropping off into coverage every so often, you know, in Steinhauer's defense, which was one of his criticisms, that he was strictly just a pass rusher and he couldn't drop off into coverage. But he's been doing that quite a bit from what I've seen. So this guy is all over the field, and he doesn't seem to be slowing down at all, and that's great to see.
No, I'm with you there, man. With the pass coverage, that was a knock. He'd never really done that in Saskatchewan. It was always just go get the quarterback. And to see him buy into this system and to buy into what Coach Steinhauer is doing, to be honest, I knew that he would, simply because he doesn't seem like the kind of guy. He's not a Sean Lemon guy where he's going to go somewhere. And remember, Chick chose to sign in Hamilton just like Lemon chose to sign in Saskatchewan and then complain about his role. Lemon did not want to play in Saskatchewan because he did not want to drop back into coverage. And you look at Chick and he's the complete opposite. He's willing to do whatever it takes to make the team better, and that's just great to see. But this defense overall, like we've talked about a couple of guys, but just like some of the things that happened in this game. Daron Carter was a complete non-factor in this game. He had that one big catch. I think it was early in the first quarter, maybe early in the second quarter, but it was in the first half, and then pretty much just nothing from him. They forced Rakeem Cato from the game because of his poor play. The defense just made him look terrible. The Alouettes, the furthest they got into Hamilton's territory was the 35-yard line. I don't even know what else to say. Like, that's just incredible. You do not see, and I know the Owls' offense isn't great, especially when they're missing SJ Green, they're missing Terrell Sutton. They're missing Kenny Stafford. Kevin Glenn wasn't in there. But I don't care who you're playing at this level. All these guys are good players. To keep Montreal from getting anywhere, they didn't even come 15 yards within the red zone. That's just awesome. And that also, it goes without saying, even though we'll say it anyway, they didn't allow a touchdown. So, like, that's one hell of a defensive performance. If you don't allow a touchdown in a CFL game, 99 times out of 100, you're going to win that football game.
Yeah, it was just a great performance overall. Cato was distraught all night. He just couldn't get it going. I was a little worried. I thought that maybe he might have a big game against the Ticats. He's a tough guy to figure out. You know, one time he looked great, next time he doesn't. So I don't know what to think of Cato, but it was an off night for him. You know, me and you are both big fans of Brandon Rutley. We both think that he's a really good running back. And 10 carries, 29 yards, not even a three-yard average. So they shut him down completely, shut down the running game and passing game. There was just nothing to be had for the Alouettes in this game.
Yeah, there's one more player I'd like to talk about defensively. Well, two, really. And that are the two rookie corners that the Ticats started, Travis Lee and Quinton Pointer. Quinton Pointer had a bit of a rough game. He was called offside on what would have been Lee's interception early in the game. Could have really flipped the game. Like, the Ticats ended up winning, so it wasn't a big deal. But that could have really early flipped the momentum of the game, and this could have gotten out of hand a lot sooner than it did. He was also the guy who knocked the ball out of John Chick's hands on that weird double-tipped interception that was an incomplete pass. You remember the play I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so he didn't have a great game, but he did come up with a sack at the end of the game, and I thought he played really well outside of those two kind of mistakes there. And Travis Lee, like, I thought he had a hell of a game. I went back and watched some of the game, not all of it, but some of it. And he was playing on the wide side, Courtney Stevens' old spot. And you don't see a bunch of action there. But every time it was there, he seemed to be around the ball. He, again, nearly had the interception, or did have the interception that was unfortunately called back. But I thought both these guys had pretty decent games for the Ticats. And again, the secondary's always been a question, still a question. But if we can get some young guys like Pointer and Lee to make plays, I think things look pretty good for the Ticats in the back end.
Yeah, and it always helps if the defensive line's getting pressure. It just helps with the whole rest of the defense. So if they can keep that up, I think it'll take some pressure off the young guys in the secondary, and you know, they won't have to cover as much. The receivers won't have as much time to get open, and they'll do a better job. So yeah, to have two young guys that did a pretty good job, you know, Pointer had his troubles, but to see those guys come out and fill in and do pretty well is encouraging, and hopefully they can build on that and get more experience and get better as the season goes along.
Yeah, it was a total defensive effort from front to back in stopping this Montreal offense, and my hats are off to the guys. They did a great job. Unfortunately, though, the Ticats did not come out of this game unscathed. Late in this blowout victory, you saw it, I saw it, everyone listening to this saw it. Mike Filer went down with an injury. Apparently, x-rays came back negative, so he's not expected to miss a ton of time, but he will miss this week. Matthew Girard will take his spot, will be starting at center. You know how much I like Mike Filer. I have been a supporter of his going back to the first year he took over for Marwan Hage. He is starting really quickly to come into his own as one of the best centers in the CFL. This is a tough loss. I've heard possibly 3 to 8 weeks. Could be how long he's out. We don't know yet. Teams are notoriously very tight-lipped when it comes to injuries, but I do know he will not make it to this game. He will not be playing in Edmonton. That's a tough break for a guy who is really starting to become, like I said, one of the best centers in the CFL.
Yeah, really, it's disappointing. I also heard the 3 to 8 weeks thing, but then I also heard something else that it's not as bad as originally thought. So it's kind of a question mark right now on when he's going to be back. But hopefully he's back soon, because he's really, you know, turning into a great offensive lineman. And we need him in there. So we need him at center. We need him putting the ball and blocking for whoever's back there at quarterback. So I hope he's back soon.
Yeah, and continuity along the offensive line is really important. We've seen when this team has gone through injuries on the offensive line, swapping guys in and out, it leads to problems along the line and protection issues. But when guys can play every week, you know they're there, it makes their jobs, the whole unit's jobs, a lot easier. I hope Gerard will fill in and do well. I don't think he's going to be as good as Filer. I think you, like I said, we've watched him blossom from guy who makes a lot of young mistakes. He was a young guy to a guy who is so dependable that this is an injury that a couple years ago people would have not cared about. Like the first year he filled in for Hage, there were a lot of people out there who were calling for his job after like half a season. And it was like, we got to have patience with the guy, and that patience has paid off. So I hope Gerard the best for him while he's in there. But I could see, especially going up against an Edmonton defensive front that's very, very potent, this could be something worth monitoring in the game against the Eskimos on Saturday.
Absolutely. It's we're gonna see if there's a good depth on that offensive line at the center position. So if he's exposed badly, I hope that's not the case. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. But if it does happen, we might have a little bit of trouble in the upcoming weeks, because that's a very important position, and we need a solid guy in there like Filer.
Yeah, especially for when Zach Kolaros comes back. The last thing we need is for him to be getting beaten up and to lose him to another injury.
Sure.
Okay, mouth shut. You ready for the Chad Owens jersey watch for this week?
Let's do it.
Okay, so he didn't have a massive game against the Alouettes. However, he now has 22 catches for 280 yards and still the two touchdowns that he had because he didn't score against Montreal. So for the season, he is projected for 99 catches, which would be a career high. 1,260 yards, which would come under his career high, but still pretty good for a guy who's 34 years old. And 9 touchdowns. So as we stand right now, that Chad Owens jersey is still very much a possibility for me. Man, and each week it gets harder and harder for me to justify not wanting to get this thing, because I got to be honest with you, man, this guy is a ton of fun to cheer for. I hate saying it because of all those years we spent not liking him, but I got to give it to the guy. He is a lot of fun to see play for your favorite team. He really is.
Yeah, he's doing a great job out there. He's best receiver on the Ticats this year, just plain and simple. So, yeah, I'm still hoping that he continues his ways and you slap on that Owens jersey, because it looks that way so far. So far, so good for Owens.
So, not, you know, the biggest Ticat news was the Filer injury. We kind of already talked about that. Not a whole heck of a lot of CFL news this week. I do want to get your feelings on one thing, though. We saw, I'm sure you saw as well, that in the BC-Saskatchewan game, Darian Durant took a low hit from, I think it's pronounced Mikhail Brooks from the Lions. Missed the rest of the game. The Riders were up big at that point. Looked like they were going to get their first win of the season. Durant comes out. They still play reasonably well, but BC finds a way to storm back, wins that game, keep the Riders at winless. The injury, much like Filer's, not serious. I think Durant was even at practice today, although he's not going to start. I think they've already announced that Mitchell Gale will start their next game. So, and I believe it's against Ottawa, which is, talk about a tough game to start your first career starter against. But there was some talk out of Saskatchewan, especially from one of our good friends, Mr. Rod Peterson, that the hit from Brooks on Durant was deliberate. It was a deliberate attempt to injure. I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. I think that's a ridiculous statement to make. I don't think that is at all what it was. Peterson seems to disagree with me, obviously. What do you think?
I think it's impossible to know. You just can't make that assumption. You can't get inside someone's head and proclaim that he meant to do something when you have no clue like what's going on in his brain. Yes, he had two other penalties in the game, but to say that he meant to do it is a little. You can't do that. Okay, you just can't get in someone's head and do that. So I think it's a little ridiculous. And you know, maybe he did mean to do it. I don't know, but to presume that is just stupid.
Well, and there was a couple other hits by Saskatchewan defenders in that game against Jonathan Jennings that were just as bad as the hit that Durant took from Brooks. It just so happened that Jennings didn't leave the game because he didn't get injured. But there was a hit by Jonathan Newsom on Jennings that I thought was borderline, not deliberate, but like really bad. There was also one, I can't remember on which touchdown pass it was. It was either the bomb to Sean Gore or it was the one to Nick Moore, where in watching the replay, you see I think it was the Nick Moore one, honestly, because I think he was throwing it to his left, and that's where Moore caught the pass, whereas Gore caught the one on the right side. I don't know who it was from Saskatchewan. I didn't pay that much attention, but they very clearly hit Jonathan Jennings in the head, like with their hand, like they hit his helmet. And like that is automatically a penalty, The refs did not call it. BC scored a touchdown, so obviously Buono's not going to bother challenging the play. They scored. They got the best possible outcome on the play anyway. But it's not like Saskatchewan wasn't out there with their own series of dirty hits as well. It just so happens that Jennings didn't get injured. And I'm not saying that Jones was sending guys out there to injure Jennings. I just think if you want to be looked at as even slightly fair or slightly unbiased, you have to talk about all the hits that these quarterbacks take, not just the ones that are against your favorite quarterback. So I just think that Peterson is a little off the mark on this. That's all.
He's a little over the top with his fandom. I'd say, like, listen, I get it. You're calling the games for the Riders. You're going to have a little bit of homerism in you. But, you know, just some of the stuff he says, you know, God's favorite team, Canada's favorite team is just a little bit over the top and unnecessary. And it doesn't surprise me that he thinks that the injury to Durant was a deliberate hit by the Michael Brooks or Cal Brooks or whatever it is.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's enough about that part. Now it's time for everyone's favorite new segment of the year. Mike, who's your bozo of the week for this week?
Bozo of the week. I had a tough time this week. There wasn't too many bozos out there. I'm gonna give it to whoever makes the CFL schedule for making an Argonauts game on the Wednesday during the IndyCar race. There was tons of traffic down there and all that stuff. I know that it's excuses, but it was still, you had to put a game on that Wednesday. I understand that. And, you know, everyone's been clamoring for it for years, but they could have scheduled it in another city and not given the Argonauts that game, in my opinion anyways. So, and also it goes out to the Toronto fans that I know are out there. I know there's lots of Argonauts fans out there, but you got to get out and support this team. I just made an excuse for the low crowd. 4,000 people were there, but you know, we have to be done with the excuses. You just have to go out and support your team. I mean, people go out on weekends, people go out to movies, people go out to, you know, in Toronto to the theater or whatever, but like just support the team. So bozo of the week goes out to the schedule makers and to the Toronto fans that didn't seem to show up. And next week there's a Monday game in Toronto. So I don't know if that crowd's going to be worse or if it's going to be slightly better, but it'll probably look bad on TV again. So once again, bozo goes out to the CFL schedule makers and the Argonaut fans for not showing up.
Oh, that's a good double whammy there. Like you mentioned, people go out on weeknights. I was just, like I said, I'm in Kingston. I was just out and about, get myself something to eat for dinner. And there were a lot of people just kind of milling around the waterfront near City Hall. And it's kind of surprising because I was like, it's Tuesday night. You don't normally see many people hanging out like that, but that's what was there. And people can go out. And the thing is, like, Ottawa has a ton of stuff going on around Canada Day, and I don't think we've ever seen a Red Blacks home game played on Canada Day or Canada Day weekend. I know there's some people out there clamoring for it, but there are a lot of people who are like, the city's busy enough. We don't really need the football game as well. Calgary doesn't tend to play at home during the Calgary Stampede. In fact, they're not playing at home this week. They had a bye last week. So again, they kind of keep Calgary away from all the hustle and bustle of Stampede. I know Toronto always has major events going on, so it's really hard to schedule around which ones, but considering the stadium is basically on the track where the Indy takes place, it didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to schedule that game in Toronto. And I know this year people are out there saying Toronto's got a Wednesday game, that sucks. Toronto's got a Monday game, they got another Wednesday game, like, oh, it's no better than the Sky Dome. This, I think, is a one-year thing with the schedule not being as good as it can be for the Argos because of the construction at BMO meant that TFC was playing a lot of their home games later in the year, which caused schedule problems. I think next year will be the year where we'll see a much more favorable home schedule for the Argos. But yeah, I'm still with you. That was a pretty poor decision on the league schedule makers to put a game in Toronto on the couple of days before the Molson Indy, because it just meant that people had a hard time finding parking spots or couldn't park at all. And yeah, it didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
No, and you know, like I said before, I'm kind of done with the excuses, but that was just the poor decision. You know, they always say, oh, don't do it on a weeknight because you have to work the next day. Well, don't do it on a weekend because the fans are at the cottage, so I don't know, whatever. But I just thought it was a poor decision to put it on a Wednesday night with the Indy race going on.
If people want to go to the game, they'll go to a game. I've been to games on Monday nights. I've been to games on Thursday nights. Pretty much any night of the week that there's a game, I will watch or go to the game. You can make a million excuses for why people don't go. Whatever. It is what it is. You know what I mean?
It's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to rebuild that fan base. They've been beaten down for years and years and years. So it's going to take some time, but I have confidence that they'll get good crowds out there eventually.
Absolutely. I think I saw somewhere that this game, even with like their just above 12,000 tickets sold for the game, was their third highest grossing gate revenue of the last 10 years or so. I can't remember the time, but it's the third highest gate they've had for a game. I'm assuming the opener was really high, and I'm going to guess it was the East Final in 2013 would have been the next one for them. So if at least the people who are going are actually paying for tickets. That just tells you how few people were actually going to these Argo games when they were at the Sky Dome in years past. So again, we do have to have some patience here. When Bob Young bought the Ticats in 2003, this team was at they finished 1-17 that year. They were the lowest that any team has ever been in this league. It took a while for this fan base to grow, and now you look and Hamilton's fan base has always been stronger than Toronto's. I don't say that just as a Ticats fan. I think anyone who observes this league has always felt that there was a much larger loyal fan base to the Ticats in Hamilton there as Argo fans in Toronto. So even having said that, it still didn't happen overnight. The Ticats didn't become a success on the field for many years later, and now they're a box office draw, and now they're selling out all their home games, and now they have the brand new stadium. So it's going to take time in Toronto. We need to have patience. We can't just say second game they ever played there, low attendance, this thing's doomed to fail. Much like we couldn't say first game they had there, massive attendance, this thing's going to work right away. Patience is key for getting the Argos there. They're going to get there eventually. I've been to BMO Field. I can tell you that place is awesome for a football game. People will go once they realize the atmosphere is good, and frankly, the team is good. The Argos have lost, like every other home team this year, both their home games so far. If they would have won one of those, or you know what I mean? Like, they haven't played particularly well at home. That leads into it too. BC has attendance issues, and they've made the playoffs for 20 straight years. So winning football, letting this develop organically, it will work. I can promise you that this will not fail, but we need to be patient.
Yeah, and like you touched on, I mean, I went to several games the year of the 1-17 season, and it was sad going to that stadium with seeing all like 14,000 people there, 15,000 people there. It was a sad sight to see, and it took some time with Hamilton too. So it can happen, and I hope you're right, and the fan base gets larger in Toronto, and it's an exciting place to go to and watch a football game.
It will. I promise you, this will work, but we just need to not expect too much too soon. That's pretty much my takeaway from this. Like, let's just...
Totally agree.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just let it breathe, and it'll be fine. It wasn't as great as it looked week one. It's not as bad as it looked in week four. It's somewhere in the middle, and let's see when they have a Saturday game or a Friday night game. Let's see what the crowd is there when it's not Hamilton, or you know what I mean? Like, let's just patience. That's all we need.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, I was pretty young, but kind of reminds me of the 91 season when they signed Rocket Ismail, and they had John Candy and Wayne Gretzky on the team and Bruce McNall. And the first game, it was 50,000. And then I think after that, it kind of dropped off. Now, mind you, it was still pretty good attendance. I think it was around 35,000. But after that first game, it kind of dropped off. So kind of reminds me of that, just kind of a side note.
It's funny you bring that up, because when I went to Ticats games that year, the Ticats were atrocious in 91. I was playing football for a minor football team in Hamilton, and one of the things we would get is either, I can't remember if it was free tickets or cheap tickets to games. I went to a lot of Ticats games that year, and I'm telling you, there was 7,000, 8,000 people in the stands. You could walk in. We would get end zone seats. You could walk and sit wherever you wanted. There was no one there. And that was a team that 2 years previous had been to the Grey Cup and played in what many considered to be the greatest Grey Cup game of all time. 2 years later, they're terrible, and no one was there. It's never been perfect anywhere forever. The Argos are the ones right now that are building something. So let's let them build, and let's not jump all over them too soon.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Okay, so enough of the Argos. Let's move on to the Ticats again. Game preview time, Mike. This one, we got the Ticats heading on their second game of their 4-game road trip to your town. They're heading to Edmonton to take on the Eskimos. You going to be there on Saturday?
Absolutely. Booked it off a long time ago. Got our tickets, and it's going to be great.
Nice. Cheer those Ticats on. Last time they were in Edmonton was the infamous Mike predicts they're going to score 50 points game. I called you insane, and they scored 49. Now, Zach Caleros isn't there. Terrell Sinkfield isn't there. This isn't the same team that you saw. Was that the first Eskimos game you went to?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So you were in attendance for that. This is obviously not the same team that you saw back in, I believe it was August of last year. But it's still a Ticats. They're still on the road. The road teams are crushing it this year. What are they? 12-3-1, I think, so far over the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, something crazy like that.
So if history repeats itself, the Ticats will escape Commonwealth with a victory. But that's not a given. The game still has to be played. I would like to start off, if you don't mind, by talking about some of the things that I want to see from the offense in this game. First and foremost, you kind of touched on it when we were talking about the Alouettes game and Jeremiah Mazzoli. I want to see no turnovers. We saw one against Montreal. Mazzoli had I wouldn't say a terrible interception. It was a really nice diving interception by Javon Johnson, but still probably a throw that Mazzoli should not have made. I want to see no turnovers, especially because if you turn this ball over to Edmonton with the offense that they have right now, that would really, really, really be bad for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah, it'd be brutal, and they're really good on offense. I mean, they have so many weapons. Who do you take away? Who do you double team? I mean, you got Bowman, you got Walker. You know, they've got a talented bunch. They got John White in the backfield. I mean, this is going to be a tough test for the Ticats, and I'm not sure if they're going to come away with a victory, but we can only watch and hope that they can sneak out with a win at Commonwealth. So on the defensive side of the ball, I'm looking at seeing the run game, or see if they're going to be able to stuff the run game, because John White is one hell of a running back. And if he gets running and they can use the run game, and then with all their weapons in the receiving, with the receivers, it's going to be a long night for the Ticats. But if they can take one of those away, I think they'll have a chance.
Yeah, slowing down Edmonton's offense is not going to be easy. Mike Riley rolled up like 460-something yards passing against Winnipeg, but they only scored 20 points. So I look at that and go, oh, the Ticats might be able to do something here. But yeah, they got to contain John White. Something I also want to see them do on offense, if we can go back to that for a second, I guess we can bounce back and forth here. I think Hamilton's got to attack Edmonton's secondary. I think we've seen throughout the first few weeks of this season in Edmonton's games that their secondary is not all that good. They lost some guys back there. Aaron Grimes is in the NFL. They lost John Ojo to injury. Pat Watkins is not the player he was just a few seasons ago.
I think he's injured too now.
Even worse for them. I think there are some ways to exploit Edmonton's secondary. We know Mazzoli can sling it, and when he is on, he is on. They have all these talented receivers. Terrence Tolliver apparently back at practice on Tuesday, so I think if he's inserted back into the lineup, you got Fantuz, you got Owens, you got Tasker, you even got a guy like Spencer Watt, you got Gable coming out of the backfield. I think you can get Gable on some wheel routes going up the sideline against some of these DBs. I think if they can attack the Edmonton secondary by taking their shots deep, and I think that they can have some success offensively against this Edmonton defense.
Yeah, that's their seems to be their one weaker point on their team is the secondary. I mean, offensive line in Edmonton's been amazing. Mike Riley's been awesome. Receiver's awesome. Running back, awesome. Defensive line, very good. Linebacker's good. And then the secondary is just the only question mark. So you're right. If we can exploit the secondary a bit and put up some points, we might have a shot.
Yeah, and my last point for the offense, before you can get into some more of your defensive stuff, is keep CJ Gable involved. This, to me, is incredible, but he leads the league in rushing. Did you know that?
Does he?
He is number one in rushing with 187 yards. Now, I don't know if that speaks to Gable.
That's it?
That's it. Yeah, after 4 weeks, wow. 187 yards. Now, the guy in second place is Jerome Messam, and he has played one less game than Gable, and he's only 2 yards behind. So, to be fair, by the time Gable gets his bye after this game, no matter what he does, unless he goes off for like 200 yards rushing, it's likely that Messam will overtake him for first. But the fact that we have talked for weeks on end about CJ Gable not getting the ball enough, for him to be number one in the league in rushing after 4 weeks is kind of incredible.
Yeah.
It's literally unbelievable because you didn't believe it when I told you.
No, it shocked me. It's been not a great year for the running back so far, because after four games, the leading rusher has 187 yards. So that's pretty incredible. Hopefully, he can keep up the pace and be the leading rusher at the end of the year. So yeah, that's that shot.
Yeah, didn't you predict him to finish as the league leading rusher?
I think so. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? The fact that he's the league leading rusher after four games gives you partial credit, because I never would have seen that coming. We know how run averse Ken Austin is. So, and again, Gable had he had 61 yards rushing this past week. So that was really the only game that he really had many rushing yards. So yeah, to see him in first is pretty surprising. But like I said, keep him involved. I'm not saying he's got to get the 21 touches he had against Montreal, but anywhere in the 15, 12, 15, 17 area, I think is good for him. And like I said last week, use him like Edmonton uses White. They're going to play against each other in this game. So Watch what Jason Moss does with John White. That's what the Ticats should be doing with CJ Gable. Let's move on to the defense. You touched on a little bit. Anything else defensive that you're looking for the Ticats to do against this very potent Edmonton offense?
Well, it's going to be an interesting matchup, D-line versus O-line. You know, they had the 8 sacks last week, and it's going to be a big test for them. The offensive line in Edmonton's one hell of a group. They might be the best in the league so far this year. So I'm interested to see if they can penetrate that O-line and get some pressure on Riley and disrupt the running game for the Eskimos. It's going to be a really good test for them.
Yeah, I know it's a vastly different group than a year ago, but we saw what this defense can do against Mike Riley when the Edmonton Eskimos came to Hamilton last year and Mike Riley had like 75 yards passing or something ridiculous like that. He was abused all night. The Edmonton offensive line was pretty much the same, but this defensive line, Hamilton's different. So yeah, I think that's a really excellent thing to pay attention to in this game, is to see what this defensive line can do against Edmonton's, and I agree with you, very good offensive line.
Yeah, it's going to be a big test overall for the defense, just because, you know, the Edmonton offense just looks so much better this year. Riley looks better. The zip on his ball is pretty amazing. You know, he had trouble in the past with kind of throwing balls into the dirt. I don't see that this year. I wonder if Jason Moss's influence is a big part of that. I'm not sure, but he just looks like a different guy this year. I've always respected Riley, and I always thought he had a lot of talent, but this year he's on another level.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like he's cut down a lot on the mistakes that he would make. He's only got 2 interceptions so far this year to 7 touchdowns. He's like 3rd in the league in total passing yards. But again, the guys ahead of him are Harris and Willie, and those guys have both played 4 games, where Riley's only played 3. Yeah, I think I remember when Mike Riley was named the league's top player. A lot of people kind of scoffed at it. I think you and I were the same. I would have voted for Zach Caleros. I think a lot of people out there would have voted for Zach Caleros. But seeing how Riley's played so far this season kind of justifies him as being named the league's top player. He has been on fire. So yeah, it's going to be a tough test. Edmonton scores a lot of points. So it's going to be quite the interesting matchup, seeing the Edmonton offense, which has been so far excellent, versus Hamilton defense that has been a little hit or miss. But when they're on, they have been maybe the best unit in the league defensively. Like, just look at what they did against Montreal. And I know Montreal's offense is terrible, but the numbers speak for themselves. They held a CFL, professional football league team's offense, completely in check. So if they can do that again against the Eskimos, the Ticats will win this football game. Whether they can do it or not is, of course, the question.
Yeah, I mean, if they can, then I'll be pretty excited for the future of this team. I mean, the Eskimos might be the best offense in the league right now, and it's just like night and day from last year. The defense ruled the team last year for the Eskimos, and now it seems to be the offense that's really clicking. So, yeah, if they can slow down this offense and, put in a good performance, I'll be really excited about what's going to happen in the next couple games.
All right, Mike, you ready to do some picks?
Yep.
All right, so before we get to that, got to, as always, remind people to join our Pick'em group on CFL Pick'em, the Oski Wee Wees. Go there. If you win, if you finish in first, I'm going to send you a Ticats t-shirt and a Ticats toque. So if you're a Ticats fan, come on, join the group. The link will be there when you go to 3 Down Nation to view the podcast. Click on it, join the group, have some fun. For the first time since we started doing this, Mike, you're no longer in first place. We have a new leader. Jason is our top guy in the group. He has 1,822 points. Just behind him is my good friend Richard with 1,780 points. And at number 3 is Tina. She has 1,560 points. Where are we? Everyone is probably asking. Mike, you dropped to 6th with 1,308 points, and I fell all the way from 4th to 16th with 956 total points. You and I picked the same teams last week. Obviously, we both went, I think it was 2-2, because yeah. I think we picked 2 home teams and 2 road teams, and all 4 road teams won. So let's kick this sumbitch off. Let's go first game of the week, Thursday night, Investors Group Field, Calgary Stampeders at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Who you got?
Well, what's the saying? Go fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm going to go with the Bombers. I'm going to go with the Stampeders. I just think that they're a better team. You know, I'm kind of losing confidence in the Bombers. They looked better last game, but still going to pick the Stampeders to win this one.
until Drew Willey can figure out how to throw the ball deep consistently, I will not be taking Winnipeg. Yeah, Calgary all the way. They're coming off a bye. They started to look really good. They got the win against Winnipeg in week two. They had the very disturbing and unfortunate and any other bad word you want to use tie against Ottawa before heading into their bye week. I think given 2 weeks to prepare against a Winnipeg squad that really hasn't looked good all year, I think the Stampeders take this one rather handily. Next up, Friday night, we have the undefeated, although not perfect, Ottawa Red Blacks heading to Mosaic to take on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, who are winless. So we have the last remaining team without a loss versus the last remaining team without a win. Who you got in this one?
I think that the Riders continue to go downhill. I'm gonna pick the Red Blacks to beat Saskatchewan in Saskatchewan.
I have not picked Ottawa all year. It's one of the reasons why I haven't done well in Pick'em. I'm not going to continue that this week. I know Saskatchewan is a better team. I think if Durant doesn't get hurt, they beat BC last week. But BC beat the brakes off them in the second half. I, too, am going with the Ottawa Red Blacks. Saturday night in Edmonton, where you will be, the Hamilton Tiger Cats travel to Commonwealth to take on the Eskimos. This, to me, was probably the toughest game of the week to pick, because it's kind of a heart versus head pick, if you know what I mean. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
I just have to pick the Eskimos. I think that they're a better team right now, and I think they'll squeak out a victory. I think and hope that it'll be a close game, but I got to go with the Eskimos in this one.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go there, so I decided to go with Hamilton just because I had the feeling you were going to take Edmonton, just because, and for all the reasons you mentioned, it makes sense. But road teams have just been able to win. It's kind of incredible, so I'm going with my heart here. I'm saying the Ticats find a way to squeak out a victory. They do just enough on offense, and the defense does what they have to do to hold Edmonton's offense in check. I think the Ticats win this one in a very, very tight contest. Although if Edmonton does win, I will not come on the show next week and be at all surprised. Last game of the week on Monday night.
Well, the Ticats are going to score 70 points. And they'll still lose.
Wow.
71-7.
If we get 141 total points in the game, I think people who are decrying the loss of offense in the CFL will really have to shut their mouths.
Yeah, that'll be an entertaining one.
All right, so Monday night football in the CFL. Don't get this very often. Sometimes we get it on Labor Day. Ticats played a Monday night game on the Civic Holiday last year, but no holiday. It's just a Monday night game. The Montreal Alouettes, coming off that embarrassing loss to Hamilton, head to Toronto to take on the Argonauts. Who are you taking in this one, Mike?
I got to go with the Argonauts. Montreal just looked so bad last week. And yeah, Glenn will probably be back. I think he will be. And that'll be an improvement for them. But I think Toronto is the better team. So I'm going to take the Argos. Even though they haven't won at home yet, I think they get their first win at home at BMO Field on Monday.
Yeah, to be fair to the Argos, the two teams they've lost to at home are Hamilton and Ottawa, two teams that are above them in the standings. Montreal, however, is very much below Toronto in the standings. You know, SJ Green's not there. Kenny Stafford's not going to be there. Terrell Sutton's not going to be there. They will have Kevin Glenn back, of course. So, like you said, that'll be a bit of an improvement over the guys they had there last week in Cato and Adams. But I've got to take the Argos in this one too, as my lone home team winning this week. I know people out there were saying, I'm just going to take road teams from now on until proven otherwise, and that's been pretty fruitful. So I've kind of taken the same strategy, although not quite for those reasons. But yeah, the Argos.
That's going to turn around, I think.
At some point it has to.
Yeah,
like it just, there's not really much else to stage. It's going to, this is not going to keep up. We're not going to be seeing 75% of the road teams win on the season. That would just be, if the season ends even close to 50%, I would be surprised. I think at some point the home teams are going to start rolling off victories. But I'm going to go with the Argos in this one as well.
So we're pretty much the same except for the Edmonton-Hamilton game.
That's right. So that will be the game that decides maybe if I move up or if you stretch your lead on me a little more, maybe you find a way to move up back into the top spot or at least the top three. But I'm a little concerned that you and I would have the same picks or the same-ish picks because we've both been kind of mediocre so far this year. But hey, maybe this is the week that one of us goes 3-1 and one of us goes 4-0.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully. So question time. I only got one this week. I guess no one really wants to ask us questions anymore. I guess we're just too knowledgeable that people just, they're bored by us giving them right answers all the time.
Yeah, it turns people off, you know.
Yeah, maybe we need to make some mistakes, like in our picks, before people will start asking more questions.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so this one came from our good buddy Joe, USFL Tecmo on Twitter. He simply asks, was there much of a reason to take Zach Caleros off the six-game injured list if he doesn't start this week against Edmonton? Now, I'm not sure. I went and looked at the rules regarding six-game injured list players and all other sorts of stuff. I couldn't really find specifically the exact rule, but I believe that after four games, a player on the six-game injured list is allowed to practice with the team. The talk was that they pulled him off so that he would be able to practice with the squad. If he would have remained on the six-game injured list, because the Ticats have a bye in the first 6 weeks, he still wouldn't have been eligible to return without being pulled off until the BC game. And I personally think he's going to start the game after the bye on August 3rd in Winnipeg against the Bombers. So, yeah, simply Joe wants to know, like, if he doesn't start against the Eskimos, which, based on what I saw the first day of practice, or read from what other people saw the first day of practice for this week, that Jeremiah Mazzoli was taking all the first-team reps, doesn't even look like Claros is going to dress for this game. So do you think there was much of a reason to take him off if he could have practiced after 4 weeks anyway and all those sorts of stuff?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I mean, I guess it might have been for the reason you said, that he wouldn't have been able to start until the BC game, and they want him to be back for after the bye week against the Bombers to get him in as soon as possible. So I mean, I guess that's the reason. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting question when you look at all the rules surrounding it, like I just mentioned. But I think this was just maybe the plan all along, honestly. Put him on the sixth game. If he doesn't progress like you had hoped and he's not ready, then at least you get the salary cap savings of him being on the sixth game. But if he does, they pull him off. And yes, they have to pay his full salary counting towards the cap. But I haven't heard of the Cats being any cap trouble. So I don't think that this is necessarily – this wasn't a move to save money, more of just like a precautionary measure. If he's not ready until – the sixth game of the season, then they do get the savings and can find a player maybe out of that or what have you. But if he's ready, they pull him out. And they did this with him before. When he got hurt in 2014, he was put on the six-game injured list after the Edmonton game, and it might have even been the week after the – I can't remember. He was put on the six-game injured list, and he was pulled off early to play back again on Labor Day after only – I think it was only five games. So his whole salary counted towards the cap. And again, it wasn't really much of an issue that year either. It's just if he's ready to go, he's ready to go. And I think seeing him on the practice field is a good thing. I think – If he's not going to start, I don't think this week. I just think that this was all part of the plan, honestly.
Yeah, it was part of the plan all along, and we're going to see that he'll be back in the Winnipeg game, and he'll have a big game. So I'm just excited to see him back on the practice field, and almost ready to go. We're almost ready to see number four back on the field.
And to give you a little tease of, I did some looking, because I get these stats from the CFL, but I also got this, like, the media guide and record book from the league this year. And I think it was Sunday night. I was kind of bored. I decided to flip through it and look at it, and I happened across Zach Caleros' career stats. There are three teams that he is undefeated against as a starter. Now, I don't like to give quarterbacks wins, but so I'll put it this way. There are three teams that a Zach Caleros quarterback team has never lost to. One of them is the Ottawa Redblacks. He didn't get to play against Ottawa at all last year because those games were at the end of the season when he was injured, but he's 2-0 against them. He beat them both times they played in 2014. The other two teams that he's never lost to, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the BC Lions, likely to be the first two teams he plays. So even if Hamilton was to lose this game against Edmonton, when they come back on August 20th to take on the Saskatchewan Roughriders at home, history shows that chances are this team is going to get two wins going into that game, and they're going to be 4-3 heading into this stretch of home games and all that sort of stuff. So just a little teaser out there for people who want to maybe hold out hope that Caleros is, when he comes back, is he going to be any rusty? He has never lost to the Bombers or the Lions, and when Caleros was played against the Bombers, they have smoked Winnipeg. So if he does indeed play on August 3rd, it could be an ass-kicking of epic proportions once again, if there's no rust there and what have you. But I just thought it was an interesting little, you know, side note to the whole Caleros thing, that he just so happens to play the two teams that he always kicks the crap out of in his first two games back.
We look at the record. If Caleros comes back against the Bombers, and say we lose this game against the Eskimos, 2-3, you know, not too shabby. I mean, we're still right there, and I wouldn't complain with that record, 2-3, getting back Caleros. So yeah, if we were 3-2, I'd be pumped. That'd be awesome. But if we're 3-2, then I'll be happy with that too.
I think we both said before the season started, if they were at or around 500 when Caleros came back, we'd take it. After week one in Toronto, I'm a little disappointed that this team's going to be either 2-3 or 3-2 because they dominated the Argos. They dominated the Owls. They had the chance to win. The BC game, to me, that was a loss. They came out flat against that one. They could have and maybe should have beaten Winnipeg if they just did not turn the ball over so much. So I'm a little disappointed in the record the team has now because we've seen them play so good, especially after week one. I looked at it and went, there's a legitimate chance that they go into the Edmonton game undefeated, and to see them lose those two home games was really disheartening. But I said at the start of the season that around 500 record, they're gonna, Claire's probably gonna come back in game six, so 2-3, 3-2 when he gets back, I'm not gonna complain. I'm with you on that one. I'm a little disappointed based on how the season started, but I'm gonna keep my expectations reasonable, and around a 500 record, nothing wrong with that with your backup quarterback starting five games.
I'll take it any day of the week,
for sure. That's it, buddy, we are done. That's the show for this week. So don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it and download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to give a question to Mike or I at any time during the week, don't just wait until we throw out those tweets. Hey, send us questions. You can hit us up anytime. Joe did. Joe hit me up on like a Sunday or a Monday. I can't remember when it was, but it was, I didn't ask for questions. He just was like, hey, I got a question for you. So again, hit us up at any and all times during the week with some questions you want us to answer on the show. We love answering your listener questions. We love the listeners being involved in the show. I know I do. I'm sure Mike does as well. Hit us up on Twitter. Yep. Mike, Twitter handle.
Mike_Ticats.
I'm Josh_Smith_82. And get those questions and comments in the 3Down Nation comments section. You got something larger than what you can get on Twitter? Hit us up there all day, every day. We look at them all. We love the feedback from the listeners. We love the questions. Be involved. Join the show. We'd like to have you there. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.